The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I should go, and so I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
Welcome to the GAA Hour live in Ennis. I have to say, it's fantastic to have the Banner Roar back. You were gone for about 4 years there, weren't you? You had to be Tipperary in Semple Stadium, and now the Banner Roar's back. Give us a Banner Roar. Yes! All right, are you going to do it on Saturday?
Yes!
All right, no, I have to say now, that's not the answer I was looking for. This is the answer I was looking for.
We're going to do it?
We're going to do it. We're going to do it.
Well, can we play that again so you know the right answer?
You think you're
going
to do it?
We're going to do it. We're going to do it.
Are you going to do it on Saturday?
We're going.
Oh, I got a great laugh thinking about this on the way down the car. All right, we have a great show lined up. I think you know who the star of the night is. It's Sherlock Nan, big superstar down here in Clare. We're going to have two gutless Galway hurlers to have a chat with Cher. We're going to have Colin Ryan, top scorer in 2013, and we have Owen Kelly as well. And we have special guest Connor Sketches, who's going to do a little bit for you too. So hope you all have a great night. Fever pitch has reached Clare. You haven't been in Croke Park since 2013. Obviously, the county is losing the run of itself. And what better way to know a county is losing the run of itself by having a shit novelty song before the game on Sunday?
Now this is a story all about how the Clare lads are the best hurlers in their towns. So if I can have a minute, you sit right there. I'll tell you all about my time following the hurlers of Clare. Just west of the Shannon, born and raised, John Conlon from Clonara is on top of his game. Pucking in a shooting, cooling or a cool, and shooting some hitch ball outside.
Okay, that's enough of that. That's enough of that. All right, we've had enough. You're embarrassed enough. When you call it H-ball, that you know, that is the end of the video. Right, listen, it's about time for a first guest. Give a huge welcome to Sherlock Nan.
Where did all these come from?
It's a fair old welcome, Cher.
Not bad.
Yeah, not bad. You're delighted. You can relax now. I mentioned first time in Croke Park since 2013, Cher. An unbelievable All-Ireland win where Clare came out of nowhere, which you described as the greatest fluke of all time.
No, I said that if it wasn't backed up, it would be regarded as the greatest fluke of all time. That's okay. A different story than saying it's a fluke of all time, because, like, great and all as it was to win it, and it was terrific, because the hurling that was produced at the both days, I think, yeah, in Croke Park that time, the one I enjoyed most was the game against Limerick, though, you know, because we had this fella, John Joe Costello. John Joe isn't here, I suppose, tonight, but he... Oh, Jesus, there he is! There.
John Joe, stand up.
There you are. John Joe was behind us at the semi-final. Remember John Joe? And Clare, of course, we could see after 20, 25 minutes that Clare were, they were going to beat Limerick. And at halftime anyway, there was hordes of Limerick people above in Hill 16 and all that. And he says, there they are. He says, look at them all up there. And at home, he says, their homes are being robbed while they're here. So, Not alone was a brilliant victory, but it was a comedy show as well, you know. And then we came to the final, and the displays over the two games. I think people would be overboard and saying this was a new age hurling, and it would be, that's the kind of hurling that would take place from now on. But, you know, you had to see Clare was so young at the time that there was bound to be a little bit of a valley period afterwards. The only thing we didn't think was that the valley would become a chasm, and that we'd be in that chasm for so long. But at least now, We're back in Croke Park. There is a chance for these fellas now to show the substance they have in them, the talent they have. We know the talent they have. But we are still, I think even all of us here are still a bit, uneasy about next Saturday night and see. We know if they produce their very best, they have a great chance, Colm, of winning. But, you know, that Munster final second half is still at the back of our minds and say, could that happen again? But we're just hopeful. We're going to Croke Park on Saturday. I'm just hopeful they'll play in a way that gives them the best chance of winning. And if they play at their very best, they have a great chance of doing it.
Yeah, no, they definitely do. Because, you're obviously a very outspoken pundit and you write a column in the Star every week and it's compulsive reading, I have to say, because I don't know what you're going to come out with next. But I'm going to read some quotes from you from different counties from your Star column, and you have to tell me who you're talking about, right? So, first of all, they have a manager who reminds me of Dermot Morgan character Father Trendy from RT in the 1980s. Who were you talking about there?
That was definitely 2016 when Galway were winning at halftime by 3 points, overrunning Kilkenny. And then in the second half, they totally collapsed, 116 to 9 points. Lost the second half. And at the end, it was an absolutely total surrender from Galway. And I suppose it gives us a bit of... The manager, of course, was Michal Donoghue. He was in his first year there. Now, it seemed a bit severe at the time, but... when you look at it, you have to see what you're seeing there and then, you know. And, if you go back on YouTube and look at the last point that Kilkenny scored there, the Galway fellas actually stood up and let the score be taken, you know. It was a complete... And that, I've been part of a lot of surrenders with Clare way, way back, but this was one of the worst I'd ever seen. I thought it was one of the worst collapses, and unless they did something about it, that Galway team, of which 14 played at some stage in the game against Kilkenny last Sunday week, that unless they did something about that, that's exactly what they were. But of course, they did.
And yeah.
This thing about criticism. If you criticise somebody... And then they come along and turn the thing around and turn from being folders or quitters into winners. I think your admiration is greater for them having done that than a team that were winners from the very start. And that's always my policy.
Yeah.
Because when I came into Clare first with Len, I spent 1 year with him first, then I was sacked, as you know. And then I came back for another year. And the first time I said, this time I'm going to be absolutely ruthless with the thing. And I went in the first night, and there was one fellow who we were after playing Tipperary in a league match, and we were after him beaten. And the first time I said to him, I pointed out, I won't mention who the player was, he's a brilliant lad, and you know, who has contributed massively to Clare. I said, you pulled out of that challenge, I said, last Sunday. And Jesus, they were all looking at me, because no one had ever said this to people before. And I just wish somebody had said that to me when I was playing, you know, that you backed down, you pulled out. Because when that's pointed out to you, it's a test of your character then. And if you have the character, you're going to say to that fellow, well, I'll show you. I won't back out. I think that was the whole basis of the changeover in Clare. Everybody was totally honest about it. Yeah, that if you not, I don't mean playing badly. I mean backing down. Playing badly, everybody plays badly. Even Owen Kelly played badly some days. But backing down is inexcusable.
Different, yeah.
For an inter-county hurler.
Yeah.
Backing down, I do not accept that from anybody. Backing down, because that is something that undermines your credibility as an inter-county hurler. So that was the basis of everything I did with Clare when I came back afterwards.
Yeah.
So I make no apology for it, you know, but I do admire Michal Donoghue and I do admire Galway for the way they changed it around and became such a brilliant team last year and cleaned out all before them. But I would also hope that maybe Saturday evening they might consider backing down again.
can you believe such a mild-mannered manager? And I can see what you're saying here because he's so, he's mild and he's soft and he doesn't look like a hard man. And I was asking Derek McGrath on the last live show about going toe-to-toe with Brian Cody on the sideline, and he said sometimes even on the sideline you can't back down from a confrontation. And there's even a psychology with managers. And Michal Donoghue's not into that, but he's turned Galway into a real steely team, and it's an unusual kind of dynamic, isn't it?
Well, he's a bit unusual that way, in that he's completely... He's a real, you know, wolf in lamb's clothing, you know. That's what he has proven to be. And when you look at the people he has got rid of in Galway, you know, people of a regard that has been there for years, that were indispensable, people in the background, they've all been got rid of. Got it. He has made it a complete closed shop. There isn't a word coming out of the Galway camp. It's the tightest group that you could possibly have now. No rumours whatsoever, because that had always been the thing in Galway, that everybody did their own thing, really. He has unified it in a way that nobody else ever unified it before, and he has done it with a steely resolve. And I think every player on that team now knows, and like what he did with Conor Cooney, the last Sunday week only reinforces that, that nobody is safe. You know, and without ever shouting that or explaining it, he has that kind of dynamic within the group now, that there's a steely determination there. And a danger that if you step beyond that or step outside the line, there's a ruthlessness there that'll, you know, as ruthless as Brian Cody, that you'll be gone, you know. So it's amazing how he has done it, but it shows the kind of personality he has. And I think he learned an awful lot when he was down with Tipperary, you know. He's obviously a person that set about becoming an inter-county manager. But in order to do so, he was prepared to learn. And he went to Tipperary to learn because they were... You know, he wasn't going to get in with Brian Cody. He wasn't going to let him in. But he went down with Tipperary, down with Eamon O'Shea because of his friendship with him. And he learned an awful lot there, quietly. And then now he's applying all the principles that he learned there. He's applying them now. It makes him very, very dangerous.
Yeah, he definitely is like a secret assassin. Yeah. Right, we have another quote here. So who are you talking about here? They're the greatest bunch of big day chokers that any county has ever produced.
The greatest bunch of big day chokers. How many years ago is it?
This was recently enough.
The greatest bunch of big day chokers.
No, I'll give you the answer. It was the Dublin Hurlers when they got rid of Ger Cunningham, or when Ger Cunningham left.
I was wrong there. Because they proved me wrong.
Yeah.
And actually, they are one of the real coming teams in the GAA, and what Pat Gilroy did. Now, they were, you know, there was an awful lot of...
But your instinct would be to defend Ger Cunningham there as an ex... Would that be the manager's union type of thing?
No, it's not the manager's union. I know Ger Cunningham, and I have great regard for him, and he's a very, very good lad, but he was undermined from within as well. But they obviously got an exceptional person in Pat Gilroy, and I think over the next few years, we will all see how exceptional he is, you know, that he has this team ethic. He can get all of them to buy into a real team ethic, giving everything they possibly can for their team. And Cunningham was very, very good. But if you're in a county and there are forces within the county constantly undermining you, it may not be your fault, but it does happen. And the thing begins to slide. And after a while, it's like the snowball. It starts to go and get bigger and bigger. And I think the thing turned against Ger Cunningham. And once it did, and once it started getting momentum, it was unstoppable. And that can happen. It happens. If you look through the American coaches in basketball or in any game, that happens in all sports. It happens everywhere. The manager might be still a very good person, but
he's
for some reason...
Exactly.
Turns against him, lost them, and in fairness now, Dublin have got a very good manager. And I think over the next few years, you'll see how good he is.
Okay, another one. They're the only team in the modern era where you see players with fat legs, bellies and arses.
Well,
that's an easy one for you.
That was the funniest one of all time. And I, do you know what I'll tell you the reason was? Because, you know, you had all the awfully former players saying, oh yeah, look, nah, I never got over 98 and all that. Nothing to do with 98 or anything else like that. It's just looking awfully and you see them. But honestly, A few weeks later, they played Kilkenny below Nolan Park, the same year, and they were being hockeyed. But the camera went in, there was a fellow warming up. Well, Jesus, you should see him. He was massive. Legs, ass, belly. Well, I burst out laughing watching the video. There he was, the epitome of what I said about the opposition. So that's definitely one time when I was right.
I think we're about one all in a draw so far, right? So here's one that you were probably proved right on, that you might have been seen as wrong at the start. That soft centre, for so long their undoing, once again raised its unwelcomed head. And then you're talking about their manager. He has done everything he possibly can to stop softness and complacency taking hold. But how can you really do that with the players he has?
Many years ago?
Last year.
Jesus.
They had. I'll give you a bit more of it. They had five or six players playing yesterday that aren't top-class inter-county hurlers. So all the talk of Beep being great, this isn't even a good Beep team.
You'll have to go further.
This is Tipperary having a great league last year and you were having none of it. They were going to be the new Kilkenny.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll tell you now. You remember before the league final last year? Now that you mentioned it. I didn't want to say Tipperary because Owen Kelly is looking up at me. Do you remember before the league final last year? I remember Henry was on television for not the Sunday game, but League Sunday. And he said that, and I give Henry a right slagging over this after, he said that Tipperary had now two teams. They had a panel, he said, in hurling, like Dublin had in football. That's all it.
Yeah.
But you could see, sure, they had no backs. They had no, except for Paddy Maher. They had nothing else. Except and within that team, there was also that softness in that Tipperary team. Sure, that was actually before the league final.
It's all coming back to you now.
It is all coming back now. But, sure, Galway absolutely devoured them the day afterwards. Just the day after that article, he devoured them in the league.
In fairness to you, Gerard, because all the talk was then that Tipperary were going to take over like Kilkenny, but you were the only one that said there that's not going
but
to be the
case. But you could see, like, when you're looking at it, I'll just make this point, everybody. When you're looking... how many people are here? There's a couple of hundred people here.
There's about 500.
Oh, well, right. For the 5,000 people that are watching here. Right? Everybody look at the game. When you look at the game next Saturday night, most people will see the game in a different way. So when you look at the game and I look at the game, we see it in a different way. And what brought that home to me was, you know, the trainer of Frankel. What was his name? Come on, Hossman here. Henry Cecil was out one day. And he had this fellow from the racing post with him, and they were watching the horses running, right? And Henry Cecil said to him, this fellow was an expert on horse racing now, and he said to him, you know, he said, when you see those horses and when I see those horses, both of us see two different things completely. And your man said to him, why? How do you mean? He said, that's because, he says, I've been watching horses for so long, and I've seen so many in comparison to you. So I've been watching hurling for so long and playing it for so long that when I see a game, I see it different. It doesn't mean that I'm better, but I see different to a lot of other people. And what I look for straight away in any team is, where are the flaws? Where would you exploit them? And that's what I was saying about that Tipperary team, especially that defensive setup. They were so weak defensively that I couldn't see them becoming a force. And looking through that panel, I couldn't see where the players were who were going to, they were going to launch Tipperary into this era where they were going to become a dominant team. So it's not that I was proved right. It's just that what I saw was that panel could not possibly become a team that will dominate for an era. Yeah. And it was right, of course.
Yeah, it did. Owen is scratching the side of his face there. Listen, in part two, Owen, you'll get your right of reply. Okay, we'll give one last one. We'll give one last one before we get a couple of gutless Galway hurlers up here. I can see Damien Hayes through the door there.
No, I never said that about Damien Hayes.
Right, who are you talking about here? They're functional beyond belief. They're totally dependent on one forward.
Kilkenny.
Yes, yes.
That was 2016.
2016.
Yeah, that was when they were going so well, they were going for the three in a row. My whole point there was that Kilkenny team should not possibly be allowed to win three in a row. Because I had seen, you know, going over to, I had seen Cork win a three in a row, 76-77, which was a brilliant team that had 15 great hurlers, you know, and dominated. I had seen the Kilkenny team, the great Kilkenny team of Henry from 2006-2012, they won the four in a row. These could not be considered, even in the same breadth, as the great teams I have seen. But they could have done to win the three in a row.
Now, they didn't win the three in a row afterwards, but they got to the final, which was a huge achievement for it. But when you look at them, and I suppose people looking back on it now say, you know, that team, that Kilkenny team in 2016, really shouldn't have won in All-Ireland. They shouldn't have won the Leinster final against Galway even that year. Now, they were beaten soundly, hammered by Tipperary afterwards in the final. But, you know, when you say the thing at the time, people say, oh, geez, that's so-and-so looked then and all that. But I can only say what I see. And I'm not always right. But, like, it's like the Henry Cecil thing. Because I've seen so many teams over 45 years, and I say, is that team worthy to win a three in a row? I said no.
Do you take flack for some of your comments? Do you get any mail or any, like, I know Pat Spillane famously gets the letter addressed Pat Spillane, the bollocks from Kerry.
Well, maybe if I do, the postman doesn't deliver it.
Because on that Kilkenny one, actually, Michael Deignan picked you up on this, and he said, Gerard didn't win an All-Ireland himself as a player, and how he can knock players who won All-Ireland medals is beyond belief. And then at the start of this year, Michael Deignan says they'll never win another All-Ireland, another Cody. So.
I know, yeah, but you know, you have all... I'd say the biggest controversy that I saw was in 2 years ago when I said that this would be a good time for Brian Cody to bail out of Kilkenny, you know. And that attracted massive criticism. That was the biggest criticism I ever got.
Really?
And because I wasn't saying Cody isn't good enough to manage Kilkenny. What I was said, the point I made was that, you know, that Brian Cody is going to be the hardest act of all time in the GAA to follow. Even a harder act than Mick O'Dwyer or Sean Boylan, who were fantastic men. And to give his successor a chance, he should get out while Kilkenny had TJ Reid, Richie Hogan, Paul Murphy, and the great players, the remnants of the brilliant team, because he was going to give the next man a chance to win an All-Ireland. And Cody's greatest satisfaction would be if he was sitting above in the stand and he saw a team playing in the way that he wanted them to play under a new manager win an All-Ireland.
Do you think
now,
think
I
like
thought
that
was perfectly reasonable.
Yeah.
But 90% of people thought, this is a total and utter so-and-so to say something like that. But I bet you in time I'll be proven right.
How do you get on with Cody?
Brian could stay till he was 100, like, because he's just a unique person, manager. We will never see the like of him again. We never saw the like of him before. But I think you always have to think of the future. That is, in every county, you have to think of the future. The future is the crucial thing. That everything continues on after your little era that is there. Because anybody, Mihalo Markety passed a great comment when he left RTE. He said, Níl in rud ach shall. There's only a little while in everything. And you should always remember that. And always try that if you made a contribution and raised the standard, that the next person, you give the next person a chance and that it continues on. Because if it doesn't continue on, that's why I've always said that 2013, when Clare won the All-Ireland, was something that gave me the best satisfaction in my life, because somebody else had brought it on. A new group had brought it on and won an All-Ireland. And now if we can win another one, then from then, it's gone on again. And then you become a real hurling county. You know, you're not dependent on the one person. And people misunderstand that. They think, oh, geez, you don't want anybody else. That would be a disaster. You hear that? You know yourself, Carl. Hear that. It would be a disaster. What good is it if you've just a little era when you were there? That's no good. It's continuing on. Everything has to continue on. And if it continues on in a healthy state, then you get even more satisfaction of it, because what you did is even more successful.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. So I think we're 2-2, are we? Was that the final count? Are you keeping scores here? Right, we'll leave it there, Ger, because it's time for our next two guests. Obviously, you're playing Galway at the weekend. You have your history with Galway. You manage these two players. Give it up for Tony O'Regan and Damien Hayes.
Hi, Damien, man.
How's it going, lads?
Going normally.
Sorry I'm late.
Chair.
Sorry I'm late, eh?
Join my chair.
Is there a chair there? Chairs, you wouldn't have room to throw a spit in your mouth here, eh? That's a whole lot, eh? There you there.
How are you going on, chair?
You're right, eh?
You should, you should pull down that bag of his father over your head.
Who the fuck is that guy? Who is that?
Jerry, it's great to have you here.
Yeah, listen, enough of the pleasantries now, Colin. Just get this over. Right? I shouldn't even be here tonight. I should be out hunting or something like that. You know what I mean? That's what I like to do.
Is it, Jerry? Because everybody thinks that hurling's your first love, but it's actually hunting, is it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, a lot of people do say, what do you love about hurling, they say? Or what do you love about hunting, they say? Is it the fresh air? Is it the great outdoors? Is it the thrill? No. I just love killing things, right? Absolutely. That's right.
All right, Chair, enough of that. Let's talk hurling. Can Clare win at the weekend?
Well, I don't say this a whole lot, you know what I mean? But I have to say, this Clare team is absolutely useless, right? they've got no guts, no guile, no nothing. Do you know what they do? They've no jollock, man. Do you know what I mean? I tell you...
It's yourself now. Don't get out of
the carriage. Not now. When I played for Clare, right? Jesus, I tell you, I always put my body on the line. I mean, I broke more bones, arms, legs, noses. Fuck it, I even injured myself once or twice. You know what I mean? But I tell you one thing now, Willie, right? As bad and all as Clare are, we have enough to beat that goodly show on Saturday, I tell you that.
Well, speaking of Galway, right, so you obviously have your history with them, with the two lads here on stage with you. What's your opinion of them now?
I've seen more brains in blow-up dolls, I have to say. let me tell you, right? I never should have went to Galway, right? The biggest crowd at Sissy's you'll ever come across, right? You know what, what happens in the dressing room, right, stays in the dressing room, right? Not in Galway. You'd hear all these stories back that night, or they'd be telling their girlfriends, oh, Loch Nan said this to me. Oh, Loch Nan did that to me. Oh, Loch Nan bet the shit on me a train. Right? Now, did I make mistakes? I did, absolutely. Remember the sand track I trained you on there for 3 months? You remember that? Now, that was a mistake. I never should have trained them on that. Sure, that was a sand track for training horses. I tried a team of fucking donkeys, didn't I? Yeah.
Right, okay. Come here, actually. Is it true you bought a car off Damien there recently?
Well, I did. I wasn't going to bring it up, but I did. There was a car there I seen on Dundee. I rang it. It was Damien. He says, oh, it's $7,000, he says. Joe, I'll give it to you for 10 cash, he says, right? So it was a bargain. He says, geez, that car, he says, it'll go 0 to 70 in 5 seconds. It would 0 to 70 miles an hour. That fucking car wouldn't go 70 miles an hour if you push it off a cliff, Damien, right? Typical Damien. I tell you, like, I managed Damien there for two years. You know Jack Russell, right? You know when you come home after about 8 hours and Jack Russell is like that, right? That's the way you be when you arrive out the trainer with Damien. Full of energy, enthusiasm, jizz, the whole lot. Unfortunately, he was just fucking brutal at hurling. You know what I mean? Now, Damien, everyone's entitled to a bad game. But you abused that privilege now for many years you did. You know what I mean? I have to say that.
Right, well, to finish up, Ger.
Finish up.
The two Galway lads reckon you were a bit unfair on them, you know, when you left them as manager. What do you say to that?
Me? If anything, Colin, I thought I was too soft. I tell you now, you say what you want, right? But I tell you, when I managed Clare and Galway, right, I always gave 150%, right? Always gave everything to the cause. My record speaks for itself as the manager, right? I led the banner to 2 All-Irelands. And I led Galway to 2 wins in the qualifier. and say what you like about Joe Lugden, right? I was always very, very fair. I treated everyone the exact same. Like total shit. And that's it anyway, lads, I'm off, right? I leave it to my apprentice here, right?
Yeah, okay.
Where do we go after that, lads? Damien, I'll start with you two Galway lads. Like, I mean, you obviously have your history 2 years together, and the whole idea of Gerard going to Galway is that he was going to bring that extra steel to you because obviously the whole country knew you had brilliant hurlers. So talk us through the beginning of it, and, you know, I'm sure there was excitement when you heard the news.
Definitely, when Jorah was after arriving on the scene, there was great excitement, so it wasn't, I suppose, because Jorah was after winning two All-Irelands with Clare, I suppose maybe some of the players thought it was automatically going to happen, that we were going to go on and start winning All-Irelands, and the training was absolutely ferocious. You know, some people might know the training that we did, but we ran through horse tracks that we did, and I'll never forget the very first training session we went down to Tubber, and I think Jorah's philosophy was that he was going to toughen us up, which, you know, he was probably right. You know, they were a bit soft, and we arrived down on us to a horse track, and we started running around doing laps like this. The next thing, it was kind of at the end of the training session, right, lads, training's over, we'll train Thursday night. The next thing was a case, where were we going showering? The next thing, we started showering inside in these horse stables. So it was where there was two or three showers. So, but look at Jorah come in, and he done his best, I suppose. The players have to take accountability as well of what happened. We weren't good enough. I always say, though, in our era, it was an unbelievable Kilkenny team on the scene at the time. They won 10 All-Irelands in 13 years. Then the other team to win 3 All-Irelands was Cork. They were the two outstanding teams. I will say that I think that we used to give Kilkenny a right good battle of it in them 2 years that Jorah was there, you know, and Kilkenny did fear us an awful lot, but we probably just weren't good enough either, though, Colin. Let's be honest and call a spade a spade. We weren't good enough to get across the line, and we didn't win an All-Ireland in Jorah's time, but as I said, it goes hand in hand, management with players, and we just didn't perform and we didn't win, and that was it.
Yeah, that was it. Like, I mean, but I don't know, Tony Oak, was it, he obviously did the sand tracks, and like, I mean, I read Jerry's book, and there's all talk about the Clare lads fighting and training, and you know, Jerry would know their prime then when he sees this, and like, that was the way it was. And suddenly there's fights breaking out in your trainings all over the place, which might not have been the case before.
Yeah, I think as players, we love that environment. I think one of the things when we got to the summer with Jerd, the training matches were absolutely brilliant, Cullum, and I think the intensity that they replicated were very much like championship. Geez, a few of the Behe lads and Gart lads used to love going at each other in training matches, and no one would pull them up for it. So there'd be three or four fisticuffs going on around the pitch, and we'd be still hurling away up and down the pitch, and Jerd revelled in that, and I think it did bring us on a good bit for the championship when it came. And I know that the lads really enjoyed that aspect of it when the summers came, that, you know, it was really, really internal competition was huge, and it was very enjoyable as well.
Yeah, just for me looking from the outside, Jerd, it just looks a little bit like you tried to replicate exactly what you did with Clare with the Galway lads. Would that be fair to say? And maybe they're a completely different mentality and different fellas up there.
And as well as that, everything had moved on, Cullum. You know, that was that. I think that was the big mistake, that everything had moved on. It had become much more professional in the preparation. I definitely had fallen behind, we'll say, the way Cork had gone. And if you think in 2006, the way Kilkenny, remember when Kilkenny took on Cork in the All-Ireland in 2006, the tactical change that had taken place then with, we'll say, Chaff, it's Derek Ling, you know, they're moving back into defence and moving forward. I think we maybe the second year there we tried that, but it was always going to take time to adjust to that.
Yeah.
But I think one of the big things in Galway that you have to look at that time, and you have to put it in context, is they were absolutely in isolation at that time. You know, that they weren't in Leinster, they weren't in Munster. You were playing teams that had already played games in the Leinster Championship and the Munster Championship. You were shoved into this little group, and there was no looking forward to a Leinster Championship or a Munster Championship.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, I was saying was, there's only one way here for Galway, and that is get into the Leinster Championship. And when they did get into the Leinster Championship, I think gradually everything started to improve. But what I would say is that the fellas we had in Galway, they were as genuine and as dedicated and as anxious to improve as anyone I ever worked with before. You know, and I have great regard for the players that were in Galway at that time. Damien is right. There weren't enough, I suppose. There weren't enough to make up. You didn't have that, we'll say, the Dahi Bourke, that kind of big, powerful. You had 7 or 8 or 10, maybe, really powerful and good players. But to have the overall balance that they have now, you didn't have that. But it was a brilliant experience for me. I really, really enjoyed it. But I had lost contact with the gap, the 10-year gap almost that was there. Things had changed a lot in that 10 years, and I hadn't changed enough by the time I went in there to really get even more out of them than what we got.
Yeah, that's very honest that you would say that, because like they're
no, but that's reality. Like I always face reality. Everything you do in life should be an experience, and you should make the most of it and get the best out of it you can. And then when it's over, you look at it and say, how could it have been better? You know, and like I did try, we did try to make the best because Louis Mulqueen, who was very au fait with the new things, Sean Tracy from Damien's Club, brilliant guy. There were two brilliant guys with me. But I would say, from my own point of view, I'd gone back hunting again, and I hadn't that fire in my belly that I had when I was with Claire. You know, really, right. I hadn't the same. Even though you do things that are the same again, I hadn't that savagery that I had with Claire. And maybe at the end of the day, even though, as Damien said, there weren't enough, you just didn't have enough to put it up to Kilkenny, who were at their peak at the time, or Cork, who went ape one night we played him below do you remember the night Donal Logue was sent off and he gave him a speech at half time and they came out like lunatics afterwards. And they still only beat us by 2 points. But, I wouldn't put that as an excuse. We weren't going to win in All-Ireland while I was there. I'd say that straight away. I wouldn't put it down to just one game or two games. We just weren't going to win.
Do a lot of people put the Galway issues down to the club rivalries. And obviously when Ger took over, it was the Loughrea-Portumna rivalry, Damien, and was that huge controversy about Joe as a young fella getting, you know, blackguarded in the county final. That's when Ger took over. Like, is it that bad? And I'll throw that to you, Tony Oak, as well. You, Damien, first. Like, is that inter-club rivalry more savage than other counties, or is that a genuine excuse, or has Micheál Donoghue calmed that down, or has he any even power to do that?
I've always said that the Galway Club Championship, I think, is a very, very competitive championship. I think a Galway County medal in Galway weighs an awful lot of weight. I think it's a very, very prestige medal to win, so I do. I would agree with you, and there's no point saying it. Is there fierce rivalry and competitiveness to win a county championship in Galway? Absolutely. Is it a championship that's taken very, very seriously? Absolutely. Was there lots of, a lot of tension in the air when Jura came on board? Absolutely. You know, and there's no point saying there wasn't, and there was huge rivalry and has been going on for years. Now, people are saying, has the rivalry gone that Galway are after winning in All-Ireland? If anyone has been going to club games around Galway, they'll see there's absolutely no difference. Only that, as we're saying, there's a new batch of players has come along. So that Kilkenny probably aren't as good. So they weren't. The new format suits Galway hurlers as well. Like Jor was just saying about the new format. The first time I probably experienced the whole new format of playing games, where instead of being in isolation waiting for the qualifier system, was in 2012 when we drew a relegation match with Dublin, played a relegation final, then we played Westmeath, then we played Offaly, then we played Kilkenny, then we played Cork next and got to an All-Ireland. It was just a whole load of games in a year, right? But yeah, it was a rivalry. Yeah, did it help? No.
Yeah.
It didn't help. And there's no point saying it did. It didn't help at the time. It brought an awful lot of bad publicity, so it did. And it was publicity that I suppose that wasn't good. But I've always said this, I've moved on, and that's in the past. And Galway are now in a good place, and they're winning All Ireland, and let it continue.
You have to see, Colm, that 7 different Galway clubs have won an All Ireland club title. That's an incredible record.
Yeah.
Even Cork can't compare to that, who dominated for so long. But what brought it home to me was we were playing, I was only up there a wet week. We were playing Yee Damien, Portumna.
Yeah.
I think he won that Ireland that year. We were playing him in a challenge match. We were inside in the dressing beforehand. And a Galway player got up, and one of our lads got up, and he says, "Lads, man, we can't let these Tipperary bastards beat us." I said to Sean Tracy, "Who are the Tipperary bastards?" Oh, he said, "That's Portumna. That's all he said. That's Portumna." So that'll give you an idea of what the rivalry was.
And there, you were like, what have I got myself into?
What the, where have I landed?
But what's but was,
just, it, so it just it, shows it, you when Jura went for the interview, he didn't do any research.
He just
thought this was going to be a walk in the park.
And Tony Oak, would there be clicks in the dressing room then between the different clubs, or was that an issue? Like, would the Loughrea lads avoid the Portumna lads in the dressing room, or would that fester?
I suppose, Wally, I was only 23, 24 at the time, so you're just in there and enjoying your hurling, you're not noticing. But when you reflect back on it, like, Ollie and Joe didn't play for a year, and we lost them to the county, like, and all the stuff that went on in county finals there for a few years, like, and you'd only imagine lads walking into a dressing room in November that there had to be tension, and there's 36 to 40 lads there starting pre-season, and everyone is just putting their shoulders the wheel to get fit, and as a young fella, you're not picking up on the dynamics going around the restroom, and you don't pick up on it, whereas the older lads would probably sense a lot more, and we're probably coming to Ger on it and trying to sort it out, and I'm sure there was a lot more going on behind the scenes a younger player wouldn't have heard. But looking back on it, sure, it was really a walking disaster for a manager coming in trying to patch that up and get a team spirit that you really need very strong when you're coming down the home stretch in Croke Park. Like, you know, otherwise you're wasting your time, like, because if lads aren't rowing together at that point, you know, it's difficult enough going at 100% trying to win up there without, you know, maybe a bit of sniping between players and stuff going on in the dressing room in the background.
Yeah.
Which you're not aware of as young fella, but obviously was happening.
And there was even a bit of sniping with you and Joe then. He said he was going away travelling, so he obviously had the hump with the way he was treated. And, well, I think I might have, a few years later, you said, yeah, he went away travelling. I think he went as far as Limerick.
Well, okay. And that's probably accurate as well. But I
we're at 3-2 now, right?
I think they had a stag in Prague as well.
I'll just say about Joe. I saw Joe, he was back the following year. I saw Joe Kenning doing the most astounding thing I've ever seen in a field. He'll just tell you the skill he had, which he wasn't half as fit as he is now. If you look at Joe then and now, even though the year he came back, he was brilliant. So it's probably his best year until last year. The first year he started with Galway. You remember he took on the whole Tipperary defence in the league final, buried the ball in the net.
He
nearly beat Cork on his own in the championship afterwards. But went down in Tath and Rye one night. You know the way you'd be pucking around, you were always trying to, we'd say, from the corner flag, there'd be fellas out in the corner flag, trying to put the ball over the bar, you know, so everybody trying to bend it in over the bar. So walking, the dressing rooms are up here, you walk down a hill, then you're into the field, and the corner flag is there, and of course, Scahill would be there, they'd be all slagging, because Scahill and Joe would be great friends. And they were all, then Moon might get it, you know, Cairns might get it, or Damien might get it, or Tony, or somebody would get it once. So Joe comes along anyway, ball is down, he nonchalantly walks up, catches the ball, has one look, bang, over the bar, keeps walking out the field. And of course, Scahill says to him, oh, he says, yeah, but you won't do it, it's your other side. He said nothing, turned back, the ball was the corner flag, raised it, one look, bang, bended in over the bar. Everyone just stood there and looked. How could you do it? It'll just tell you the skill that man has. Like, it's unique that any one individual could have the kind of skill that he has, you know. So, like, I'd never say anything. He's just such a fantastic player. And he's producing it now more consistently. Like, Seamus Durek was you all know the joke, isn't it? He always had this argument that consistency is a lot more valuable to a team than periodic brilliance. Now, Joe was an expert on periodic brilliance. He produced the odd brilliant thing that they take your breath away. Goal in the Leinster final in 2016, all that type of stuff. But now he's a more rounded player. You know, he's producing it more all over the game. You see, even against Kilkenny the last day, when Kilkenny comes back to a point, he's the man who takes it on. I saw him with his hand up looking for the ball. He gets it, puts it over the bar, the 2 points up. So, you have, like, I wouldn't like that comment, which was accurate, but I wouldn't like it to be seen as undermining Joe in any way or my regard for the talent that he has, because he is a supremely talented player.
Yeah, you know? No, he is. You were kind of exposed to Gerard's more unique way of doing things, Damien, before you played Clare in the qualifiers, wasn't it? Or you were in the same group. And this was 2007. The team was named in the huddle just before the game, so you had no idea of what the team was. So what was that like?
I remember we were at dinners and we were up at the hotel and we were after getting our so-called pre-match meal, and we were after having the team talk and all this. But there was a couple of things that day, you know, when you look back and you go to yourself, like, you know. And I always remember, you know, obviously Jura was the manager with Clare and he had such a regard with so many of the other Clare players, right? But I always remember we were outside the hotel and we were getting ready to go. And next thing, Frank Lohan started walking up towards the hotel like this. And I remember looking, going, what's Frank Hogan or Frank Lohan doing walking up towards the hotel? And like, I was potentially going to be marking this lad, but Frank
Lohan... You had no idea, because he didn't tell you.
Frank Lohan walked up to the hotel to get a rope or get some physio off Colin Flynn, who was the part of our setup. And I was going, what's the story here? And whether he was getting getting patched up or getting a bone shoved into his back or a bone shoved into his backside. And next thing, we were all there looking. But I do remember to the dressing room and... We're all talking out, and at this stage, we're after having the team meeting, and Jordan didn't pick the team, so he didn't, and we're all still kind of wondering what was the team going to be. And next thing, we're out in the pitch, and next thing, Jor came and he goes, right, lads, in, and I'll name the team for you, like this. So next thing, he named the team, and he goes, and the inside forward line is, he goes, Hazy's 13, he says, Eugene is 14. And I always remember this last part, and he goes, and number 15 is the assassin himself, he says. So I automatically thought it was Kevin Broderick, and he goes, Carol Wade. So basically, so it was new, but I think the whole reason behind it was that Jure thought there was too much, and he told us this, there was too much of an emphasis on the first 15. Mm. And if you weren't on the first 15 on the Thursday night, that the other 15 players went in a sulking or they tuned out, where we all know that this is all changed and it's not all about the best 20 or the next five subs. And I think that's what it's about. And I travelled that day with Sean Tracy to the match, who was my own club man, and he was explaining this to me. And basically, some lads did tune out. And I think maybe you might elaborate more to a job. But no, you're right. And the same day, we played Clare, and Clare pulled in the pitch, and Tony Considine was the manager, and the rumour was that Joro gave Tony Considine a hand and let Clare beat Galway because Tony Considine was under pressure for his job. And this was all the rumours, and this was the truth, you know. But and then the rumour was that Joro wanted to play Kilkenny in a quarter-final, that he thought we'd have a better chance beating Kilkenny in a quarter-final than if we played them in a semi-final or whatever. But the same day, we were absolutely useless. and that's long and short for it. It must have
been a lot of pressure on you with that whole kind of circus going around, like nobody's fault, but you going back to your own county. Yeah, it must have been a lot of pressure on you.
You know, it's always a problem, Colin. You know, when somebody comes back to their own county again in charge of a team, it is something that has to be, you have to put into the equation as well. You know,
but we saw Davey with Wexford were very flat too.
And back like his behaviour after the game and before the game.
Wasn't Davey.
If you were from Wexford, you were saying, well, Jesus, like, what is he doing down here? Why isn't he giving his best to Wexford on the day, you know? But it wasn't that. That was the whole thing about it was, ever since I started coaching, and Joe Hurley will know down that there, I always laid the emphasis on, it's not the 15 that's playing. It's the whole panel. You know, that everybody has to prepare to sacrifice everything for the good of the team. And that came in with, they will say, the dummy teams with Clare and all that. That you were trying, and people were always outside, they were saying, oh, geez, what about his parents and his girlfriend and his cousins and everything else? I said, that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who represents, what 15 represents you. If you are a panel that really believes in working for your county, that the first 15 shouldn't really be, you know, be the be-all and end-all to you. It's the good of the whole team that matters. So that was a game that wasn't a knockout. So I was, and it was the first year there, obviously. So it was trying to impress on them. It didn't work, by the way. But anyway, it was trying to impress on them the importance of, you know, playing as a group, the whole thing, and the group ethic being more important than your own ego or your own individualism.
Yeah,
you know?
Okay, fair enough. Tony, you're a professional sports psychologist now, so you give me your analysis on this. Like, I mean, where...
What I particularly loved that day is one memory, we were walking up from the hotel, I think it's the old ground we're in Ennis, or what's the one near the pitch?
Temple Gate.
And it was like a sea of supporters are on left and right of us, and Jer's up ahead marching with the Galway T-shirt on him. And everyone is applauding him as if he was the Clare manager that day. It's like Michael D going around waving, and we're all marching in behind him.
Braveheart stuff, so it was.
But it was an interesting day. Like, we played absolutely terrible, so the whole psychology side of it, I don't think it worked on the day, Jer, in fairness.
No.
But
definitely not.
We tried and everything in that 10 years.
It was because of what you said there, you know, the people, because you were coming back to Clare, people cheering you, as you say, Frank Long coming in, the whole thing was a complete disaster. The only thing was, it wasn't a knockout game.
Yeah.
And you see, you had Leash. Was it Leash or somebody like that afterwards?
Yeah.
And then we played.
Tough one.
Oh, sorry.
Handy one to get back.
A Freudian slip there.
I've two to finish up with you. So actually, just after refreshing my memory, that Michael Carton was telling us when Dublin played Clare in Ennis, that Dalo got them off the bus at the bottom of the town, and they walked right up through the middle of the town. Dalo was laying down a marker, and look, we're here. We're here in away territory, and we're going to walk up through this town, and we're going to stick our chests out. And this is the kind of psychology he kind of came out with. And they probably learned from you, Jared.
And they lost as well.
All right. All right. Okay, we're going to finish up with this one. Which of the three is going to tell me the story about knocking the bull down?
Oh, jeez, the bull. No, the bull nearly knocked us down.
Have you all heard that story?
Yeah.
Jared knocked the bull down and the county board chairman owned the bull.
He did. We were coming back from we were coming back from Ethan Rye one night and...
Did you mean to hit the chairman or the bull, sir?
I wouldn't mind knocking down the chairman. I hate knocking down the bull. hitting the poor old animal horse. Michael Ryan wouldn't be so bad.
So what happened?
The bull was on the road, right? And I think Louis was driving. And I said to Louis, you better pull in. You know, the bull was... There was another bull inside in the field. Yeah. And he was trying to get into the bull that was in the field. He was probably gay. But anyway... Although, maybe in this politically correct atmosphere, I shouldn't say that. But anyway. The bull decided anyway, when we pulled in, that instead of passing us on the outside, he'd try and pass us in the inside. But of course, there was no space in the inside. And he just tore up on the car at the side of us. And destroyed. He destroyed the car. And it was a car we had got from... doesn't Damien Hayes give us the car?
thank God.
Thank God. Thank God. But it was one of those... Like, we used to have the greatest crack coming home from... you know, people say, OK, you didn't win anything. But it was such a great an experience, number one. And an enjoyable experience. And working with fellas like the two lads here, it was just, it enriched my whole life. Like, I could have stayed those 2 years with the Sunday game and all that kind of stuff. But I absolutely loved the 2 years I was in Galway. We weren't successful for many reasons. Many of them being my own fault, whatever it was. But I loved it. But we used to have the greatest crack with Louis. You know Louis, like, he's such a character, coming home at night time. And the one with the bull was something that was... It kind of got legendary status, the bull, and the fact that he belonged to the chairman attitude. But it was just one of those, you know, I never regret it, thank God, to Galway. And, like, when I meet those lads in Galway, 10 and all, those great characters, great, great characters. You'd love to have seen them. And when they did succeed later on, won the Leinster Championship, I was just absolutely thrilled for them.
Yeah, okay.
Because... You won't believe it, and all people here will know, there's no real bitterness between Galway and Clare. You know, there'll be a rivalry on Sunday, but it's a real friendly rivalry. Nearly, like, they were huge supporters of Clare back in the 90s, we won. And last year, we were thrilled that Galway finally made the breakthrough and win. Or at least I was anyway, maybe not everybody. Especially fellas around Tober and places like that. But it's great. Like, I think we're entering a great era now with Galway, Clare, Limerick, Cork. A new era... Getting rid of the ones that have dominated, not getting rid of, but sidelining Tipperary and Kilkenny for a while at least, which is great. So it's a brilliant time to be involved in hurling.
Yeah, it is definitely. Listen, right, well, that's all we have time for part one, and we'll be back with part two very soon. So give a big round of applause for the three panelists. Welcome back, Ennis. All right, please give a huge welcome. I already got you to cheer. I'll have to do it again now. For panel two, Gerlach Mann staying, obviously. I don't think there's any question about that. Give it up for Colin Ryan and Owen Kelly. So, Colin, yourself and Ger are related. I just found that out today.
Yeah, there's good breeding, I think, in the Loch Ness and Fecal. I don't know what it is.
So and Brendan Bugler.
Yeah.
And Brendan
yeah.
Bugler as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Jeez, there's a net there, Terry. You're still the godfather here. So, Colin, I want to read out one comment of Ger's to you. And seeing as that you're related, how you've had to defend Ger in amongst the Clare panel, potentially. So this is on Clare. I'm not sure what year this is, Ger, but this is maybe after a few years of not doing too well after 2013.
Oh, yeah, it was 1899.
They're like a boy band who had one big hit and faded away, but keep recycling it to less and less interest. It's a great one, isn't it? Colin, what's the reaction from the Clare panel when you hear Ger saying something like that?
Just another one of Ger's quotes. Like, I think we've seen them all, the one-liners. I think he's famous for his one-liners, I think. So, we would have, I suppose, listened to weight he carries, like, you know, with having the success he had and, you know, and being the manager that he was. I think, of course, you know, lads are probably hurt by it and, affected by it. And I suppose we would have always kind of tried to do better and tried to win. And it wasn't for the lack of effort, I suppose, you know, that we had been doing. And but it definitely probably hurt us a small bit, I suppose, coming from it. But listen, these things you have to take them with a pinch of salt too, you know. Like, Jurors, obviously, you know, he's pundit, you know, his opinions, you know, are, you know, he's paid for an opinion, like, you know, and stuff like that, and he has to give it. I'm sure we could have had many other quotes from around the county, I'd say, as well, that probably would have been just as juicy, only that they weren't printed, you know. So you kind of have to take them with a pinch of salt. But they definitely did hurt, I think, with the weight that that Jura carries and stuff like that. I think Davey was none too impressed with him, but I think the players definitely, you know, just kind of took it on board and, you know, tried harder.
Would there be a bit of reverse psychology going on there, Jer, trying to rile them up a little bit?
No, actually, Colin, the reason for that was...
thanks, Jer.
I was giving you a chance there, Jer.
I'll tell you, it's like, it's serious in a way, but because after Clare winning the All-Ireland in 1995, I was down the following year, but after being beaten by Limerick in the championship, we were out. That time, there was only one chance. And I was down in Ballincollig, and Mico Dwyer was there. And, Mico, you know, it was a thing like this, a question and answer thing, very like you have here tonight. And Mico said a thing that night that absolutely stunned me. He said, in the course of what he's talking about, and the last thing Mico would do is insult anybody. But he said, any team, he said, can win an All-Ireland. They can get a lucky break. The best teams might be put out of it by each other. But he said, it takes a great team to win too. And that stuck. I can still remember all the journey back from Ballincollig that night. I said, "Jeez!" I said, "We have to win the second one. I have to win that second one." And Colin will tell you all that. I presented the medals to most times after the win in under 21 and all that. Well, Colin, not Colin's under 21 now, but the ones later on. And I was always saying to them, "Les, you have to win that second one. You know, even if it's second under 21, which they won 3, but even when you won the All Ireland in the senior." I said, you have to try and win that second one. You will not be regarded as being a great team until you win that second one. You know, it's a great thing for Clare to have won the All-Ireland, a brilliant thing. But to copper fasten their place in the history of the game, they have to win that second one. And that it was what Mico said to me that night. That was drove me on to try and get Clare to win that second All-Ireland. And when we did, I think that looking back now, if we just had won 95, it would be good, it would be great. But it wasn't the same as the winning in 97. That is the one that copper fastened the place of that team in history. And you want to see the present team, you want to see them doing the same thing.
Yeah.
So it wasn't as flippant as it might seem. It was, you know, this is what, if you do this, you will have your place in history. If you don't, you'll still be regarded as a one-hit wonder. The one-tune piper kind of stuff. You know.
I suppose in 97, beating Tip twice was nice as well, which brings us on to Owen Kelly. Owen, you have your right of reply to Jerry now about Tipperary there, if you want it.
No, I'm happy enough. I just want to sit here and listen, because I'm learning some amount. Len Gaynor, Tipperary man trained in Gerlach Nan. Eamon O'Shea, Tipperary man trained in Mihal Donoghue. And when Porthumna were so successful, they thought they were Tipperary men. So we're just spreading the gospel, so we are. We're just spreading the gospel.
See, that's that tip pocket that we all
We're just spreading the gospel. So I think I have to rethought about coming down here. Mitchell Levin is sitting on a stage beside Colin Ryan and Gerard Lochner.
Well, you're definitely in enemy territory, because even good, like, there's a huge rivalry between Tipperary and Clare.
There is, but like I'll tell you, when I started out hurling with Tip back in 2000, 2001, it was at its height. You know, and I suppose when I was going to games, 97, 99, like, that's what you were really built up on. Like, and I remember my first time into the panel, like, Nick English was the manager, and his big thing was Clare. It was Clare, it was the physicality, it was the train, it was knockout championship. And Gerald will tell you, like, and that's how we trained. Like, those Tipperary guys, when Nicky got hold of them around 98, 99, Devil's Bit was the first port to call up and down that. Sure, probably to wean out the guys that weren't mentally and physically up for that challenge, because Clare had brought the, you know, the physical element of the game to a newer levels. Like, but you know, I suppose the 2000 game for me, being down at it, just gave me a feeling for what, when you were introduced into the panel in 2001, what was to be expected. And like, I'll never forget one night in training in Turles, Nicky was in the middle of the pitch with the whistle, and John Carroll just blew me out, and I was flat out in the ground, and Nicky just came over and he stood over me, he said, "Get up," he says. You know, and that's what you were going to be. That was what was confronting you in a couple of weeks' time. And, you know, it was clear, their physicality. And, you know, once you got over that game, then I remember 2001, I don't think Gerard might have been gone at that stage. We were gone then. But like we beat Clare, but that was still in our psychic. Clare down in Páirc Uíomh, Caldron. We were looking enough to go on and win the All Ireland that year. But like you grew up, I suppose, with a hatred for Clare. Let's call a spade, do you know what I mean? But I think that man had kicked it off nicely.
To be honest. Wind up Mercer, yeah. Well, like that was gladiator stuff back then, even more so than now, where it's more, I don't know, like it was skillful back then, but it wasn't a short game. It was these 50-50 balls.
When you meet Tipperary people and you go down, you know, we go down there playing down drum and all that kind of stuff, they all recall those games and the atmosphere that was at the games and the tension that you could cut with a knife. And the sound that was coming from the crowd, relentless all the way through. But only selling himself a bit short here. Because he came on in 2001. And, you know, when you see a young fella coming on, and he was well touted as being great, you know, future great for Tipperary. But in that game in 2001, he was inside the corner forward. He came out the field. He was hit by Shawnee McMahon and by Ollie Baker. Now, bad enough hit by Shawnee, but hit by Ollie Baker as well. And he went down, and he got up in a totally defiant way. Now, I don't know if he scored it or not, but he got up, and the defiance he showed, he got up. He lifted the whole Tipperary crowd, and you all said, hey, this is going to be a good one. And that's what he turned out, you know, turned out to be a brilliant player. But that was the day he announced himself as the type of player he was, or the type of player he was later to become. And Clare were the benchmark at that time. If you could stand up to them, you know, the physicality, the like of Baker and Shawnee and all those had. I'd say that game, you only won by a point. Yeah. Very controversial finish with Dickie Murphy and all that. But that was the game that gave you real confidence to go on and win the All-Ireland.
Well, I remember that 99 as well. Like, and Tipperary were just really riled up for that. Do you remember Paul Shelley forward, Brian Lowen, some battles. You know, and Tipperary that day thought they had got over Clare because that 97 thing was still there, like, you know what I mean? It was eating them away, and sure, Davy then stuck the penalty to draw the game, and a week later, sure, Clare just annihilated a tip down in Cork. Like, do you know what I mean? So there was, you know, it was a serious rivalry. Like, it was hatred, Gerard. Like, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't your friendly rivalry. It was, do you know, the banner was in full swing because they were winning. Yeah. Like,
Galway and Clare is nearly too friendly, isn't it?
It is,
that's good. You get this cranked up here a bit, Gerard.
No, Galway and Clare is totally different. Yeah, totally that different. Time. All of you remember the under-21 match in Innes.
Yes. 99.
Were you playing in there? You tell us about that.
Oh, yeah. Jesus.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Donald Toohey, like, you know, he's there on Sunday again, like, but, like, it was ferocious after the game, like, it was just... That was one that robbed from us as well, wasn't it, George?
That was a late goal.
That was Friday.
It was the square ball rule. It just came in and Donald Toohey, I think his toe was outside it or something, and it was up the other end of the field. We had a free on the 21 to go up. 2 points up or a point up, and got pulled back for 65, and sure, Pab Burke nailed it.
I think Seamus Hennessy, the captain, thanked the referee, did he? Yeah. Or the umpire, and the umpire.
That was nice.
He?
Yeah, we remember that. All I remember is the referee and a supporter and a Clare fella just coming across, and I thought the referee is going, like, just get out of here quick, like. I thought there was a supporter. I just thought he was going to kill him, like.
But I think he was also the last of it. People were saying, "This is going to be too far," because there were a few incidents in the stands and all that afterwards, and people were saying, "Hold it, time to pull back a small bit," you know. So it was brilliant for there was an era there, we'll say, for 4 or 5 years, and the rivalry was fantastic. But I think the great thing about GA people is that they know when to draw the line. Generally, it's not like, we'll say, the English kind of. Sorry, I probably have insulted somebody else. But I remember that night being above in the stand and Tipperary people around us and people abusing the Tipperary people. And I said, hold it now. I said, that's never meant to be like this. It's all like when you're down in the field and the crowd shouting out, like, man, you're baldy. That was grand. It wasn't a peaceful process.
'98. Like.
No.
Not wrong with being bald. That's a designer haircut.
Amir, I want to ask you, Colin, about something Davey said. And this is when you won the All-Ireland. He made a comment about saying that some lads were on stuff harder than drink before he took over. Now, like, I mean, I'm sure that set a lot of tongues wagging amongst the squad and lads that have been there before him. Where is he getting this from, or was there anything to that?
You don't think there was only my waddy and biscuits, did that?
It was some turnaround.
Yeah. We went on harder stuff. I think he probably had a bit of truth in what he was trying to say. I think in the way he said it, it was probably going overboard. You know, I remember in 2007 being, you know, I suppose a young gun insider, probably, you know, coming in under, you know, Colin Lynch's wing, and there was probably a few lads there and stuff like that. But I remember distinctly, you know, lads hanging shirts up before league game.
Yeah.
And hanging shirts up for a championship game. And, you know, hanging the jeans up and, you know, that it was, you know, ready for afterwards. Like, and I remember thinking this was normal because obviously I was just in there. And I remember having a chat to Colin Lynch one day and he was like, he was livid, like, you know, he was just, you know, this was not on. But that is what had seeped in. You know, that it was kind of nearly, it was normal to, you know, worry about the night out rather than maybe worry about the game. And he was probably right. You know, that whole thing had to disappear from Clare Hurling if we were to succeed. And I think he probably, you know, he set about, I think, doing that in the right way. You know, I suppose maybe he went overboard in the end, you know, that maybe the whole idea that we could enjoy a win or, you know, could enjoy a loss, or maybe it was good for the team, you know, ethics and, you know, to work like that. But he definitely probably had the right idea, but I think the way he said it probably maybe took it up a small bit wrong. I think, you know, a lot of players were probably hurt by, you know, thinking that it was maybe something else. But listen, I'm not.
If you were going to go on talking about me, why didn't you just put me in the show, Les?
Davey, how's it going?
Have you a chair for me?
I have a chair for you here. 1 second now. Davey, what the hell are you doing here?
You know, I was down there in the audience, you know, and a few boys have been saying a few things, so I came up to say a few things.
All right, Davey, so what have you got to say?
I'm not saying a word, so I'm not. No, you're not going to get it out of me. I know what you boys are like, but look, I'll say one or two things, all right? But, you know, Colin, you're there talking about, I know what you were on. You were drinking that fucking Lucozade Sport, you were, you know? Owen Kelly there as well, Owen, you know. Babs Keaton said a lot of things about Owen. I actually trained Owen in college, you know, and I get no credit for it. Huh? Babs said he was a fat this, that, and the other, and he all the laps he wouldn't do to me. He was an unfit this, that, and the other. And Babs comes out with some crazy things, but he was spot on there, wasn't he? You know what I mean? I suppose Owen Kelly is the best hurler Tipperary ever produced, isn't he? Huh? According to himself.
Come here, I want to talk to you about you and Ger, because you're a great double act. What's your experiences like with Ger as the manager?
Well, I wasn't going to say anything, but, you know, I was talking to my therapist about it last week, you know, and you were fairly tough on me, Ger. You know.
You need counselling?
More than you know. But you were, you know. Do you remember that time I was late for training? And you bet the shite on me. Or do you remember that time I was too early for training? And you bet the shite on me again. I wouldn't mind Ger was the one driving me to training.
He had a few words to say about Galway before a big game. You were managing Clare for Davy. Like, I mean, what's your recollection of that?
Oh, that time he thought it'd be great to write an article in the Star saying how gutless they were. We were playing them in the quarter final. My last game, it turned out to be. Why did you do that to me, Jar? You know what I mean? It was like playing against the feckin' Power Ranger. So it was that day. They were well oiled up, so they were. Bollocks.
All right, Davey, last question. Are you going to be shouting for Clare this weekend, or are you holding a grudge about the way it all ended up for you there?
You know, a lot of people say a lot of things about me, you know. But I'm fairly loyal. I'm like your one from Love Island, that Georgia one, you know what I mean? I'm loyal, so I am, you know. And I represented the banner for years with distinction and the whole lot, and I was always very proud to wear the jersey, you know. And I know a lot of people stab me in the back. Jor. The county board, the players, even the supporters, you know. But look, I can sit here and say hand on heart, I hope to God Galway beat the shite out of them. Look.
Good. He's great, isn't he? We'll talk briefly about the match, lads, because we're going way over time, and I just wanted to throw a quote from Davy Fitzgerald at you. And you don't know what
Davey meant by this, or maybe he was annoyed that Clare didn't play the way he wanted him to play against Wexford, but he said, if Clare stay away from doing that stupid stuff of hitting the ball long all the time, they won't win anything. They need to work the ball the way they were working it today. All three of you can discuss this, because, Clare have gone to a more direct game, but that probably won't work against Galway. Do they need to go back to the 2013 style a little bit, Ger?
Well, I suppose when you look at this Clare team that we are there now, you go back to 2010 when they came to Croke Park with a minor team in 2010 and 2011. 1 year, Podge Collins centre-forward. The other year, Patrick Connell centre-forward. And we were all saying, what the hell are they doing? You know, Paul Kinnocker come in with the two lads at that time and they were playing this game, moving the ball up along the wings, runners coming through the centre, and it was spectacular. Yeah. You know, and it was a spectacular success at under 21. And then, of course, Paul Kinnock went in with Davey and they adjusted that then for Senior. So there is no question that Clare will ever go back to just the goalie pucking the ball 110 yards and everyone trying to win it. And nobody wants them to go back to that. I think what they have done now, I think even Davey's most fervent supporters, and listen, nobody should ever forget, Davey won an All-Ireland with Clare in 2013. You know, that can never be underrated or underappreciated. But I think we would all agree that in the year since, they went off at a tangent completely. For example, playing Shane O'Donnell. Leave out the sweeper part of it. Playing Shane O'Donnell as a lone player above in the full forward line. I mean, it was ludicrous. You couldn't possibly be successful that way. Now, what it has gone to now is a combination, really, of there are some aspects of when Davey was there, and they were there before he came, you know, and they're still there, of walking the ball up the field, which is the only way for that type of, for that team. But what is really impressive about him now is the full forward line. You know, that there is a man in there, John Conlon, who's the focal point in there. You have Podge in one corner, you have Shane O'Donnell. So now your most dangerous line is your full forward line. And that wasn't the case for the last 5 years. Now, if you think when they won in 2013, above in Croke Park, Shane O'Donnell inside and full forward, the full forward line was a big factor. So there is a difference between 2013 and the years that followed, because the years that followed, it became too tactical and too extreme. So now they're not gone back, not just to 2013, but they're gone back to a style of mixing up, playing long ball when it's needed and playing short ball when it's needed. But above all, the emphasis is on getting the ball to the full forward line. And that has paid dividends from them in the good games they've played this year. But what I really like about Clare, you know, and I'm probably in the minority in this, is, you know, everybody says the game against Limerick in Cusick Park was a poor game and Limerick was this and that. But the structure of Clare that day was absolutely brilliant. And the tactical approach whereby they bypassed the Limerick half-back line, which is their big strength. You know, they were so tactically astute that day. And then you had John Conlon inside in the full forward line creating havoc. They looked to me like a Croke Park team that day, Clare did. They looked to me like a team, like one of the few teams that could take on Galway. Because instead of being physically bullied by Limerick, who people regard as a big physical team,
yeah,
Clare dominated them physically. So coming out of Cusick Park that day, I said, Jesus, I said, we have a team for Cusick Park. And that's what gives me great hope for Sunday. It's not anything like the play that was there for the last few years. Tactically, it's much, much better. But it's not getting rid of everything that was there either. You know, playing short when it's needed. Now, there are a few faults we might discuss later on, but there's a lot to be optimistic about heading to Croke Park on Saturday evening.
Yeah. Is there a kind of a cockiness and confidence, Colin, that you can tap into that she came out of nowhere in 2013, won an All-Ireland very impressively, no one had seen it coming, but when you hit Croke Park, that's when you perform best that year? Like, I mean, I'm sure that's what the Clare team is telling each other now. We're a different animal when it comes to Croke Park.
Yeah, I think, you know, and he said this recently, that, like, Croke Park is where everybody wants to be. And I think, you know, everybody wants to lift their game for Croke Park. I think saying that maybe this Clare team, Croke Park suits them, I think it suits them because they want to be on the big stage.
Yeah.
I think it's not...
It's a great way to be, that it suits you rather than having that fear.
Yeah, like, you know, I think all the fields are the same size. You know, Turles is the very same size, you know, as Croke Park. You know, and it's logistically, like, you're running out over the same lines and stuff like that. But I think it's, you know, there's something about this Clare team and relishing the big days and stuff like that. And I think, you know, going back to Ger's point, I think when you look at where Limerick are at now and the resemblance of what Paul Kinnock has done with them is a lot similar to what we started out with in 2013. I think where we went away from it was going from having two men inside to having one man inside,
yeah,
you know, and having one man back. And, you know, we probably we probably, you know, we wrote our own obituary, you know, a small bit, you know, as players and everything like that, that we didn't
You abandoned that sweeper for the semi-final and the final, didn't you, in 2013, no?
People say that. I think, you know, Paddy Donnellan sweeper, the first ball against Limerick kind of abandoned that, I think. You know, I had a free and Paddy suddenly was above Poseidon 21 and I didn't, you know, it wasn't pre-planned, it wasn't anything, but Paddy had the intelligence to play that role, you know, that was just, you know, it was phenomenal, like, you know, that he knew that, you know, he couldn't impact the game if he was just sitting back in front of a full forward line and, or full back line. And I think he knew that, you know, if he could get on more ball like that, you know, that was the way it was going to be. I think having somebody to sit there and probably worry about your full back line is something completely different. And, you know, I think that's where they've kind of gone away from now. You know, as Podge is only drifting that small bit, he's bringing a corner back out with him.
Yeah.
And then it's leaving John and Shane, you know, to fight their own battles inside rather than 2v3 or, you know, 1v3 like it was, you know, in some ways. And, like, listen, John Conlon is in the form of his life. You know, he's just playing absolutely phenomenal. I've never seen him as lean. I've never seen him as relaxed. I've never seen him, you know, as... And I'd be very close to him. And just even the way he's talking about the game, he... you know, he's relaxed and, I suppose, you know, building a house or having things outside of hurling that are, you know, taking your mind off things might be helping him. But I think we're in for a ferocious battle between himself and Dahi Burke.
Oh, that's
everybody's looking forward to it.
It really is something to look forward to. But that's the interesting one about Podge, and he's not going too far, because if he goes too far on, the cornerback will just drop back and won't follow him. But Podge goes, but doesn't... He makes sure he's being marked, and that leaves the 2-on-2. And, like, I mean, that's the obvious thing from Clare this year.
Sure, that's what they want, like, you know, and Podge really has... you know, the tip game, he was one of the central players when he came on that really drove on that day, you know. You know, he has a bit of pace about him. He's unpredictable. He's ducking and diving and that, you know. But I think there's a big Clare confidence here. And, like, if you go back to 2005, Cork ultimately won the All-Ireland, but Clare felt that that was one that got away. If they had to get to the final... They would have felt, Anthony Daly often said it, that they would have had the edge over Galway. And so that bit of confidence there. But Clare can match him physically with Peter Duggan, John Conlon. But they can bring something to the table that a lot of teams might not have, like, is pace. Do you know, and that's the thing we'll say. You know, if they can get that running game going and mix it up, I think Gerard's completely right there. Mix it up, like, you know, because, you know, forwards want quick ball in as well. Like, you can't beat that unpredictable quick ball from the half-back line, you know. But, look, I'd give Clare a great chance, but... You know, it's just to perform there. That's the thing, like, you know, and, like, maybe the highlight of the weekend for the Clare Sports mightn't be the match at all. Like, it might be Newlands Cross, we'll say. The last time they were there, there was traffic lights, and there. They're gone now. So I think, like, the cameras will be out. So I think I'm Gareth Shea Connor are going to have a field on penalty points at Newlands Cross on the way up to the bench.
You have to go early.
Was the spire there back then? Was it? They might be all taking pictures of the spire there on the Connor Street.
Look, come here. I'm looking forward to Newlands Cross and the game. So.
Ger, just we're going to have to wrap it up. We've gone way over time. Just one quick one before we get predictions off you is how will Clare handle this Skehill puck out and Johnny Glynn on the edge of the square? Because that's a very obvious tactic for Galway. Bizarrely, they went away from it for the first Kilkenny game after it working so well against Wexford. They went back to it and it worked. You'd be amazed if they're not bombing down puck outs on the edge of that square.
It's not so much the puck outs, Colm. It's what I'm afraid of is... what happened in Thurles the last day with Galway, that the minute they won the ball in the half-back line, they transferred it to David Bourke or Johnny Cohen, and the minute they got it, they banged it into the full forward line before the half-backs, the Clare half-backs could get back, or the Kilkenny half-backs could get back. And you see you're Whelan, Mannion inside, crossing over each other, you're Johnny Glynn inside, and they just tore Kilkenny to shreds. 1-15, they scored in the first 32 minutes. I mean, that's incredible. So I would imagine they'll repeat that again because the perception is there, and I'd agree with it, that there is a fault in the Clare full back line. Now, the fault is not in the quality of their hurling, but it's a residue of this bloody sweeper thing that we had before. That the instinct of the backs to attack the ball is very slow in coming back. You know, that's because when you were sweeping in front of you, you know, you can break the ball. The sweeper will break it. Somebody else picks it up. You don't have that instinct for attacking it. And their full forward line, especially the two corners, are brilliant at attacking it. So our full back line, it's how they have improved in the meantime. That's the big fault I see with Clare in the meantime, at the present time, is the cornerbacks and David McInerney, they're great hurlers, but they're not attacking it fast enough. They must be really attacking it from the very start. So rather than the puck outs, which I think Clare will deal with enough, it's that fast ball coming from midfield that they did against Kilkenny the last day. if they try that against Clare, we've got to be ready for it.
Yeah.
That's the big... To me, that is the main tactical thing that I'd be looking for in the early stages, especially on Saturday night.
Yeah, OK. Well, listen, we'll get predictions off you, and we'll start with you, Owen, because you're actually the most objective here on the panel, although Ger's very objective too, actually. Yeah. You can't be faulted for that. So Paddy Power have the betting at Galway 4-11. You get Clare 11-4, nearly 3-1. Handicap is -4. How do you see it going?
Yeah, look, I think Clare have had a great season, and even for the management team, you know, to get back to Croke Park, we'll say, get to an All-Ireland semi-final, it's progress, you know. Just think Galway, you know, they got maybe the kick up the backside in the first Leinster final.
You can
final.
Say arse,
do you know what I mean? In the first Leinster final, so they just seem to be a team, we'll say, that are hell-bent on winning two, like, you know, and, it, you know, Tony Keady was... very instrumental, we'll say, in their mentality for last year's All-Ireland final. You know, I know it was a sad occasion, but they want to emulate that 87-88 team, like, and it's not been spoken about, but you know, I think Gerard mentioned it there tonight, you know, great teams win one, but the really brilliant teams win two, like, and, you know, they're just probably further down the line than maybe than the Clare team, just in physicality-wise, I think. So I'd expect it to be a ferocious game, but I probably think Galway are going to get over the line.
Okay, right, Colin. Do you think Clare would beat the four?
I think that Pat O'Connor and Jack will have to have a lot of work done. They'll nearly have their work to do before the ball is even hit in. I thought they did extremely well against Limerick on Seamus Flanagan and Graham Mulcahy that way.
Did.
You know that they kind of they,
your half back line stayed back that day.
I thought they physically bullied, you know, Seamus Flanagan before the ball had ever come in. He was pulling and dragging at him, and you know, making sure that they weren't getting ahead of it. And I think they will have to do that. I think Clare won't make a physical battle of it. I think they will want to move the ball quick and through the lines. You know, pull Grobe McInerney out of centre back. You know, like if they change that, if Tony's going to be there, you know, they have to pull him out, or suddenly they have to change their centre back.
Yeah.
You know, then things start to worry. It's a total different ball game for Galway. They're defending in All Ireland. You know, we found that extremely hard in 2013. Every team was gunning for you. Every team had you worked out. You know, Clare will, and I thought they've been really tactically astute, I think, in the last couple of games, you know, and how they've worked teams out and how they've done it. And I think they'll have their homework done again on Saturday. And I just think getting back to Croke Park, I think if they stretch Galway's defence, I think they will just have, you know, just something small against Galway. And if Galway, we've seen a bit of weakness in Galway this year against Kilkenny. Everybody said they're all Ireland favourites from the start of the year. It's hard to see, you know. There's a bit of a glitch there, and if Clare can dominate that and take advantages where they are, you know, I can see them coming out maybe on top.
Okay, fair enough. It's 1-1. It's back down to the great man for...
Well, like, we have to be realistic. I mean, this is a really... this is a really, really good Galway team. No question about that. But a powerful team in every way. They have pace, they have skill, they have physicality. They have now the confidence gained from winning two Leinster championships and winning All-Ireland. They're a totally different team than they were 2 years ago. It will take a monumental display from Clare to win. It's as simple as that. And it would be a monumental win if they won it. Right, they have to stretch the defence and the pace and all that, but at the end of the day, you'd have to say Galway are favourites to win, and there's a reason for it. You know, being realistic,
yeah.
I think it'll take them from the players, from supporters, if we just stop them from getting a good start. They have a lot of players, and you know, lads, that thrive on if they get a good start. Galway, you know, when things are going for them, they can really skin you. We have to do something at the start of the game that doesn't allow a gap to open. And if we do, there'll be a chance in it. If we're in it with 10 or 15 minutes to go. But I would have to say that I do think, realistically, looking at it just with totally coldly, that Galway will be Clare. But I hope not.
Okay,
you that's know. A sad. I have to be honest.
No, that's fair enough. Yeah. That's fair enough. Yeah. Well, most people would agree with that, unless you're Colin Ryan, obviously.
Yeah.
He's living in Cloud Cuckoo Land there.
We'll see Saturday.
All right, well, we give you one more. Are you going to do it on Saturday?
Yeah.
No. Are you going to do it on Saturday? We'll leave it at that. Give a second panel a round of applause. All right, great stuff. That's all we've time for the second panel, and that's a wrap for the whole night. So thanks very much to Paddy Power, who we're in association with, and we'll talk to you on Monday on the podcast. We'll be back again with a review show. So see you then. Good luck. Thanks very much. Bye.
I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd still go, and so I opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's harder to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.